Welcome to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What issue in the news do you want to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our two guests from different political viewpoints will debate the top issues in the news this week, from Syria to the state capitol. And let me welcome them now. Very happy to have with us Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. Also joining us, Dan Kapanke. He is former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Dan.
All right. Well, let's talk about Syria first. It looks like the president says he has not decided yet whether he is going to respond militarily, but he does say that the U.S. government is convinced that the Syrian government used chemical weapons against its own people. It appears the U.S. may act alone with regard to military action in Syria. The British Parliament yesterday voted against joining in any military action. However, France says it may still go ahead with a strike. Well, let's get your thoughts first, Christine. Should the U.S. get involved militarily or stay out of Syria?
Well, you know, everyone is so war-weary after what we've been through over the past decade, it's hard for anyone to say we want to get involved. I think the president doesn't want to get involved. But he drew a line with regard to this issue of the use of chemical weapons, and I think that's the right line. I think he's justifying the attack by saying it's a humanitarian necessity, and he wants to make certain that the prohibition against chemical weapons is a meaningful one, and if he doesn't stand up for that now, although they have been used a bit in the past but not to this extent, if he doesn't stand up for that now, then there will be no meaning to our position. So I think he's in a bad position right now, and he has to make a decision to do something. But I think if he does do something, it has to be something meaningful. Military assets probably have to be hit. They have to make certain infrastructure Syria is hit so that Assad really, you know, believes that there will be consequences for this conduct. I think in Britain, I think they lost by 13 votes or so, I think was the report. And the British Parliament said, until we get the report from the UN, until the inspectors are out of Syria, we don't want to have a vote in the House of Commons that has any drawing power for Britain. So I think that, we really have to, I would be in favor of him waiting to get more information. But if he does choose to do it, I guess I understand his justification.
Well, Dan Kapanke, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, Christine laid it out pretty well. People in this country are pretty weary of, engaging again with another country in the Middle East. However, as Christine pointed out, the red line in the sand or the red line comment made by the president has kind of put him in a corner. At this point, obviously, he's failed to garner any international support, at least any meaningful. But I feel that some people say, once the United States is engaged, the world is a better place. And I think if this is really proven that this is true, what's happened over there in Syria, I think there should be international outrage. And I think collectively that there should be, action should follow. So I believe this will happen, and it's just too bad that the president has been unsuccessful as far as garnering support worldwide for this outrage that has taken place in Syria.
Yeah, well, we had, coincidentally, yesterday, Congressman Mark Pocan, a Democrat, and Congressman Tom Petri, a Republican, on the show yesterday. And both signed a letter that went to the president saying that they want a consultation and they want to be able to, I guess, authorize a potential strike against Syria. Do you think Congress needs to be consulted first, Christine?
Well, I heard Mark say that, and I agree with him that, there is a real position that you know, the Congress has to be consulted under the War Powers Act. And I think the president is saying this isn't a war. This is simply a tailored strike for a limited purpose to stop the use of these weapons. So if I were in Mark Pocan's seat, I would want to be informed. I would want to make certain that the president built trust, and I would want to make certain that there was good communication and not some kind of a political spin when we talk about what's happening here. We've been down this road, and nobody has much trust of the military when it comes to telling us the truth about what's going on. So if I were Mark Pocan and I was in Congress, I would certainly want the same thing. So I think there's nothing wrong with asking for more information and then getting some assent from Congress. Obviously, the Congress, as it sits right now, doesn't ever agree on anything. So it's hard to know what the president's supposed to do in this situation. But I don't think there's anything wrong with making certain Congress is fully informed and get as much assent as he can get.
Yeah. And do you think Congress should approve such action, Dan?
Well, if I were with President Obama, I would want some kind of congressional support here, official, because he's kind of out there by himself right now, as we mentioned earlier, and certainly he needs to go to Congress and explain his case to them and garner support within our own country for any kind of action that might ensue. He has talked previously, I think, on PBS about a shot across the bow, and I think that's very inadequate, and it will show weakness, and that's not enough as far as any action against Syria in this case.
Yeah. Well, what Dan Kopanky, are you at all concerned about reaction from other countries, perhaps allies of Syria, like Russia? What kind of reaction they're going to have?
Well, I think there's no question that Russia is not going to be in favor of any kind of action against Syria. I would be stunned if there were. I know they're calling for the UN to get together and at least some members of the UN, but I don't think you're going to get that. But I think it's very important that we'd have Great Britain, we'd have France, we'd have other allies on our side as far as any kind of action is concerned. And let's not forget about Israel being right in the middle of that. So we need to support and defend them in case of anything that happens to that country, our friend.
Christine, the consequences of such an attack should happen?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I just have to comment. Joy, I've never been on with Dan Kopanky before, but I've never agreed with my opponent so much as I have this morning. But I absolutely agree with everything he said, and I think the consequences can be, you know, really horrific. I mean, Senator McCain has been yelling about this for a long time, and he says we're right in the middle of something that could really blow up. It's not limited to Syria. This is a regional problem. And it could have regional consequences. So I'm sure the president is thinking about that very carefully. You know, we all remember he was brought into power in 2008 because he was a great critic of the war. So I'm certain if anyone is thinking about this, it's him. And he knows his responsibilities and is trying to come forward with a plan that will be the right plan. And I really pray for that.
Well, an intelligence report is expected to be released to the public today that lays out the case that Syria did, in fact, use chemical weapons against civilians. President Obama told the PBS NewsHour that the evidence is clear that Syria carried out the attack. Let's take a listen to President Obama.
We have looked at all the evidence, and we do not believe the opposition possessed nuclear weapons of that or chemical weapons of that sort. We do not believe that, given the delivery systems using rockets, that the opposition could have carried out these attacks. We have concluded that the Syrian government, in fact, carried these out. And if that's so, then there need to be international consequences.
So 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you would like to comment on possible, perhaps probable, U.S. military involvement in Syria. We're going to move on to some other topics in a short time. Saeed in Green Bay is with us. Hi, you're on the air. Saeed,
that is. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I think the initial statement by our president to have drawn this red line was extremely naive, as it has set him up in a situation where his options are now limited, and also has set us up for any other actors in the Middle East who want to get us enthralled in Syria to have conducted this this chemical weapons act. Our policy in Syria is bankrupt. We can no longer claim a moral high ground when we have sat idle and watched the killing, the slow genocide that has gone on in Syria. And now to come and propose a limited military action whose objectives are only to uphold the reputation of our president, rather than any real objective, is profoundly stupid.
Sayed, thank you for the call. Christine, your reaction to that, that it shouldn't just be to uphold the reputation of our president.
Well, I appreciate his comments, and I think anytime you draw a red line, you take a very big risk, and I think he's right when he says it wasn't the smartest thing in the world. With regard to the policy in Syria, it has not been something that we have been able to follow, you know, in a way that it is understandable and clear. And if we are only going in for the sole purpose of this chemical attack, I agree with him. We have to have a more concrete policy that people understand. And I don't think the American people understand it yet. And I really believe the president has a heavy lift to convince the American people that we need to go in there on this one basis. And so I would agree with Saeed, and I would say that we need more from the president. We need more communication. We need more information. And once we have that information and get this report from the UN, maybe people will feel differently. But right now, I think people are very hesitant to support it.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
Yeah, well said, Christine, and the caller made a lot of sense, and that's why more than ever I think that the president has to meet with Congress, has to get approval for any kind of action, and also has to get international support.
Kimberly and Toma is with us. Hello, Kimberly.
Hi. My question is even looking at all the people that have been leaving Syria to go to Lebanon, all the rich people, all the mukbangs, all the people that started all this baloney aren't even there. And we'd be firing upon their country, Syria, and doing just as much damage to the people, the innocent people, as they did to their own. We'd be just as guilty. And that's bullshit.
We're gonna excuse Kimberly in the passion of the moment, and we will ask Dan to respond to the rest of that.
Well, whether people have left Syria or not, if these atrocities are in fact taking place and they're coming from the leadership over in Syria, then I think we're compelled to take some kind of action. I we have people here who are. Been victims of horrific acts, and again, I don't think that we can stand idly and let this happen, if indeed that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, if the people are going to suffer and have suffered 100,000 civilians killed, and when you read the reports of the chemical poisoning, it's horrific. So when you hear about that, you know, you feel, as Dan said, compelled to act. The question is at what level and how we do it. Is it going to be limited, you know, tailored drone strikes? No one likes to even think about drone strikes after what we've seen in Pakistan and some of the other countries. But, you know, if that's what he's talking about, I guess we need to know that so that people don't suffer more. I think Kimberly, in her impassioned comments, is right. A lot of people feel like enough is enough. We shouldn't be hurting civilians. But I think that the president will be very... If he takes this action, I pray that he's going to be extremely careful not to cause more harm.
We are reviewing the news of the week with our two guests, Christine Bremer-Moogley, who is an attorney in Wausau, and Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator from La Crosse. We are going to talk about some other issues in the news coming up in just a bit. 1-800-642-1234. If you would like to join in with an issue that matters most to you, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Dan Kopanky, and with you if you'd like to join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. A military judge has sentenced Major Nadal Hassan to death for killing 13 people during the 2009 shooting rampage at Fort Hood. Hassan never really denied being the gunman, and he acted to protect Muslim insurgents in Iraq and Afghanistan. It could take years before he's executed due to numerous appeals that will likely happen. So, Dan Kopanky first, was that an appropriate sentence?
I think so. I believe that he wanted to die. I think he wanted that sentence. Obviously, if he didn't, he would have had defense. He didn't want defense. He defended himself, and he was pretty much moot during the whole trial, admitted doing it. I think what's really sad here is, number one, obviously for the victims and the families of the victims, and number two, no one seemed to dare to speak out, and after the warning signs were pretty evident that this guy was not your regular military officer in the United States Army.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Right, I agree. It never should have happened in the first place. Everything was out there to let us know that this man was a danger, and he wasn't stopped. And now we've got this trial, which, you know, really almost becomes like a show trial because he didn't even have a lawyer. He had someone, you know, assisting him, but he refused a lawyer. As Dan said, I think he wanted to be sentenced to death because he knew that was the sentence that he would get. But, you know, under the military rules, there are numerous appeals that he's going to go through now. And if he ever is to be sentenced to death and executed, the president himself has to sign off on it. So this could take, you know, decades before anything really happens in terms of bringing him to justice. So he will live with five other men who have been put into a military death row, and it will just go on and on. So it's a sad chapter, and it's not, you know, it's come to conclusion, but there really isn't a good conclusion.
In other news, Vice President Joe Biden yesterday laid out a couple of new gun control proposals. One new step would curb the import of military surplus weapons. The Obama administration is also proposing to close a loophole that lets certain weapons registered to corporations go without background checks. So neither one of these proposals needs congressional approval. It's executive order stuff. Christine Bremer-Mugley, do these seem like reasonable measures to curb gun violence?
I think that the president and vice president are pretty frustrated with what's happened in the Congress and not passing reasonable gun control measures. And the filibuster in April certainly didn't make people feel warm and fuzzy about the Congress, when we know that the vast majority of Americans are in favor of sensible gun controls. So here we go. We have these two pieces of legislation or these two regulations that the president can do that within his power. They're limited. You know, I think that they've said that no reimportation of military guns that will maybe keep 250,000 guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have them, but most of these guns are antiques. I think they're World War II guns that they're talking about. And hopefully, however, there will be some military-style weapons that are kept out of our communities with these rules. And the other rule with regard to background checks, I guess certain people that should not have guns were buying them through corporations, and that was a loophole, but that only applies to the federal gun registrations. So it's very limited, but I think it reflects the frustration of the president with not being able to get the full panoply of regulations he wanted passed. And they're going to try and do whatever they can this way with the powers that the president has. And I salute him for that. And I think most people in this country believe in universal background checks.
Dan Kopanky.
Well, I think this is kind of an end around legislation that would address this issue. Following the Newtown, Connecticut shooting, there was a lot of talk about legislation in Washington, gun legislation, and it died. And it died because there just wasn't support amongst senators in both houses, and both parties, excuse me, and in both houses for this. And that's why it died, because people out here have expressed their desire to limit any type of gun control measures coming out of Washington.
Well, I think there was a huge disinformation campaign by the NRA with that bill in April, and you know, even the bipartisan group that put it forward in the Senate, we're very disappointed in that. And so, you know, I think we have a far, far way to go with regard to gun control in this country and getting a real handle on it.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking today to Christine Bremer-Moogley and Dan Kopanky, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have an issue from the news this week that you would like to discuss with our two guests. Well, this week marked the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's famous I Have a Dream speech and the March on Washington for civil rights. President Obama spoke before tens of thousands at the National Mall, urging them to become modern-day marches for justice and racial harmony. Dan Kopanky, what's your assessment of the state of race relations, the state of civil rights in the United States today?
Well, obviously, we've come a long way. Are we where we want to be? I'm sure not at this point, but you know, I feel like so many that, I mean, discrimination of any type is appalling. And if it were not for people like Dr. King, who knows where we would be today. And he gave his life for this cause. And when I read stories and you see the Jackie Robinson movie, 42, of what he went through. And my baseball hero was Hank Aaron, and I've read stories of what he went through, even in the 70s when he was about to break Babe Ruth's record. It's just, it's unconscionable that this would take place in the United States of America, but it has, and any kind of discrimination today is again, appalling, and it's not acceptable. And so it was, you know, you got to take your hat off to people like Dr. King and others who lost their lives in such a terrible way, fighting for a cause that they really shouldn't have had to.
Christine.
Yeah, great comments, Dan. I think that, you know, what the president kind of focused on was, it was a great speech. And what he focused on was now, where are we today? And it certainly, even though it's 50 years later and we've come, just by him standing there, we know how far we've come. But, you know, we have this huge economic disparity in our country. And it's centered in the African-American community. I mean, you know, the median income of African-Americans is 58% of that of a white family. And the white wealth is 20 times greater than that of African-American wealth in this country. So huge economic disparity. And we now have a Supreme Court that, you know, recently overturned key provisions of the Voting Rights Act, which still need to be put into effect. And we have legislators that are trying to limit the rights of people in Wisconsin to vote. And so I think that we have to be vigilant, and we have to take from Dr. King's courage. And as our president said, keep marching and just remember that these things are not over, and we have to keep working toward freedom for everyone. You know, even civil rights for gays and lesbians are something that is not recognized yet in this country overall. So, you know, Dr. King would be in his 80s now, and you wonder what he'd be thinking as he would watch our president up there. But, you know, we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go.
Let's take a call from Jeff in Toma. Hello, Jeff.
Right. I believe, you know, exactly what the commentators have been saying as far as the civil rights is concerned. But unfortunately, the families of color have not accepted the responsibility of being families. So consequently, a lot of the freedoms that they now and should have are being wasted by them by the deleting of the core family. As far as the
Jeff,
jobs
what do you mean by that? The deleting of the core family.
Well, when you take a look at it, what's the husband and wife, or what's the? I'm sorry, I can't think of the proper term right now. But the normal sense of family, where there's a husband, a father, and a mother in a family, it's ridiculous. It's like 75% of African Americans are born into a one person family. How can they receive the support or know the freedom that they have when they themselves are being placed in bondage by themselves with only having one parent family?
All right. Well, what about that, Christine? Is there responsibility on the part of the African-American family to, I don't know, pull itself up by the bootstraps?
Well, I'm no bootstraps believer, mm-hmm. but I think that the president recognized in his speech, I don't know if you heard it, Jeff, but what he said was, too often we had the black families had taken no responsibility and hidden behind weak excuses for problems that could have been solved by themselves. So even the president acknowledged that there is some issues with regard to not working as hard as we could work, all of us, to make certain their success. But you cannot take away the fact, Jeff, that economically the black families have been under a great deal of disparity. And so that has effect on families. We all know that money problems are the biggest driver of divorce. And so, you know, when you look at a black family and you think of the economics that they've lived under, many of them, there is a reason for that. So I don't think it's good to just say it's always their fault. It certainly isn't. But there is some, I agree with the president, and obviously he feels this strongly, that there should not be excuses made for failures. Everyone should try harder to make certain there is success. We all have our stories of how hard our parents worked and our grandparents worked to get to where we are. And that's the same with them. And he's saying, work hard and don't make excuses and work as hard as you can for there to be success.
Let me go to Joe in Milwaukee. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the Martin Luther King dream is still just a dream, and it will always be a dream as long as white people in this country are allowed to run it. Look at the way they treated Obama and still treat him, asking for his birth certificate. I think your commentators are incorrect. Racism and hatred are more prevalent than ever, and if you live in this world and talk to people, you'll hear underneath their breath, it's not displayed as it once was, but the hatred is still there, and the dream will never come to fruition until white people are no longer allowed to rule this country.
You want to react to that, Dan?
I think that's pretty extreme. Certainly, there is racism, we abhor the racism in any type, and there's some that may still hold those prejudices and are racist out here, but again, I live in a smaller community, La Crosse, and we're not just white anymore, and it's been good for us. It's wonderful for us, and we have Hmong here, we have blacks, we have Hispanics, we have Caucasians. We're getting along, and everybody wants to raise up everybody else. I mean, we're working together here. It's maybe in parts where this gentleman comes from, where he's living, it's there. But we're working. There are some, yes, and it's very unfortunate, but we do have that. But I would like to say too, the previous caller from Toma Jeffs, where he talked about the family. I think it was Bill Bennett some time ago said that, you know, one of the biggest downfalls in America is that families don't sit around the dinner table, husband, wife, children, and talk about the day's events. And whether you're black or white or Hispanic or whatever color you are, that has an effect if you don't have that family. There's no question about it. If you look at what's happening in graduation rates in some of the inner-city Milwaukee schools, if you look at the black-on-black crime in Chicago where my nephew is a police officer, It's got to be addressed. It has to be addressed by everybody. And yet, some people are afraid to talk about it because if you talk about black on black crime, you're a racist. No, you're not. You're trying to avoid these kind of criminal activities and address them. And that's what we all need to do.
Right, well, so, I think there's also I think that you have to recognize that, you know, if we look at the numbers, the numbers are really astonishing with regard to the numbers of out of wedlock children being born in African American households. But I mean, it's like 72%. It's just horrific. But those numbers are tied directly to the economic disparity. I mean, the numbers between African American men and the unemployment rate is over 18% in some areas. And for white men, it's 7.7% nationally. So when you look at these numbers and you think of economics and you think of how the families are handling it, they're doing, you know, there are reasons for some of this, and we all have to recognize those reasons. So we're going to maybe talk to you this morning about low-income earners, but these economics are really important, and we have to do everything we can to support them. I agree that some of the comments were very extreme, but there is no question but that this president has been attacked in ways that no other president has been. The birth certificate issue is still living. It's hard to believe, but there are still people out there that are raising it. And so where is all this coming from? It's very hard to understand if you don't put it in some kind of a race category, because it doesn't make any rational sense.
Well, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal says enough with the talk about impeaching President Obama. He spoke out after at least three congressional Republicans told constituents about the possibility of impeachment. So, Dan Kampanke, do you think this is a worthwhile pursuit or not, this talk about possibly impeaching President Obama?
I agree with Governor Jindal. You know, let's focus on his policies, which I think are taking this country and down the wrong path, and Governor Jindal thinks that, and there's a lot of us out here who think that. So let's not focus all our resources and energy on trying to get him out of office, but how about addressing legislation policies that are detrimental to the future of this country? And so I couldn't agree more with Governor Jindal.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Yeah, I agree with him, too. I remember when he said... you know, the Republicans have to stop being the stupid party. So, I mean, he has a way of getting right to the core. And, you know, Obama's overall approval rating right now is 51% in our country. That's pretty high, considering what he's facing right now. So, you know, the last time a president was impeached, in the next election after President Clinton was impeached, the GOP suffered pretty badly. I mean, Gingrich had to resign. There were in the midterms, they lost a bunch of seats, and I think they rated like 60% disapproval rating. So they better walk carefully here. If the Republicans really want to do something meaningful, why don't they do it? They talk about repealing Obamacare as the big issue, and one of the reasons, and Benghazi is the reasons that they want to impeach him. But yet we haven't seen any reasonable alternative to Obamacare come forward. We just have 41 votes to repeal it. It just doesn't make any sense. So I think they better walk very carefully if they want to talk about impeaching the president.
In another news story, fast food workers across the nation, including Milwaukee, Madison, and in Wausau, went on strike yesterday to demand a hike in the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. It's currently $7.25. So, Christine, do you support the workers' fight?
Absolutely, I do. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm a lawyer in northern Wisconsin, so I'm in my car a lot driving around, and I happen to eat a lot of fast food. And so every time I go to a fast food drive-in now, I feel like, oh, boy, I feel badly about it, because I feel that this has really been something that's come forward, and I'm thankful that we all are really aware of what's going on. I mean, the numbers for these people are horrible, and when you hear the stories about people working 40 hours a week and only being able to afford their rent, they don't have any food in their house most of the time, and they have no furniture, and they're just barely getting by. I mean, there is no reason that our minimum wage shouldn't be raised so that these people have a living with some dignity. You know, I was looking at this last night when I was preparing for our talk this morning, and, you know, the statistics are, if we just kept up with inflation since the last time the rate was raised in 2009, these people would be making $10.52, and yet the legislation that can't get any support is just to raise it to $9 an hour, $7.25 to $9 an hour. So even what is proposed, which can't get support, would not do enough just to keep these poor people up with inflation. And 66% of people polled in this country believe that it should go up to $10 an hour. So, you know, there's a comment I just have to say in the materials, and you hear this a lot. The Wisconsin Restaurant Association said, well, we can't do this because it would cost jobs and increase prices. And you know, that's just a myth. There's absolutely no evidence of that. The Center on Economic Policy Research said that when there is a raise, and we look back in history of the minimum wage, that does not have an effect on jobs. What it does is it actually reduces turnover so that low-income people aren't always looking to get out. They actually stay in a job, which helps save money for employers. And I'm an employer, and I know turnover is very costly to me. It improves efficiency in the workplace because these people stay and they become more efficient. It might compress wages for the highest earners, you know, like these CEOs that are making quadrillions. But, you know, there's only very small price increases. So these myths that keep being perpetrated about low-wage earners. It's just not right, and it's hurting our country. And so I just think that we've got to take a – I'm glad the president is looking at this. We've got to take a strong look at this.
All right, let's get –
this is something that we really need help on.
Dan, your thoughts on the fast food workers' strike and the call to raise the minimum wage.
Well, we'll be at a difference on this one, Christy.
Okay.
But we want people to have a job and to work hard and to get promoted and learn skills which will put them in a situation where they can be very competitive in the labor market. We have our baseball team. We hire about 70 people, which are seasonal in summer. And many of these people are young people, several, their first job ever. And they're 15 years old, 16 years old. And we are actually introducing them into the workplace and also training them to be there on time, work hard, learn a skill, pay attention to what's going on so that they can take this experience with them to learn more and get a better job. Nobody, I don't know of any one employer who really wants to hire somebody who is comfortable with a minimum wage. It's just, you talk to employers out here, we want people that work hard and excel and are promoted. And if we can't do it within our company because of the economic constraints, then at least they've learned that skill and they can get out into the workplace. They have a resume, and they can show people that they're willing to work and do whatever it takes to get to the next level. That's the American way. I have in the past supported minimum wage increases small. The president's looking at $7.25 to $9 an hour. That's about 24%. Not too many people are getting those kind of increases today. I know these are low-income people, again, but the minimum wage was never intended to be an income that you could raise a family and stay at the rest of your life. It's a starting point, and that's what it is. It's a starting point, and we promote people within. We give them bonuses if they work hard. They have opportunities to grow and learn how to work and go on from there.
All right.
That's the way we view it. And in fact, I just was at a fast food restaurant yesterday locally here, and I asked them, I always ask businesses, how are you doing? And they struggled for 5 years, really struggled, and I knew it because I go past it every day coming home. And they're starting to come out of it. And I'm sure a minimum wage of $9 or $15 an hour would lock the doors. And then who does that help? And so I think we have to be fair as employers, but let's be reasonable, too, in what our demands are as far as the workplace is concerned.
You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator from La Crosse. He is the owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. And Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollop Law Offices in Wausau. And she was one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Coming up, it's our Week in Review quiz, and we have some other state issues to discuss as the Week in Review continues here on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us. Coming up, we will be talking about state news, but now it's time for the Week in Review quiz. Governor Scott Walker sat down with a Milwaukee TV station this week, and he said the following.
There's nothing like hearing that potato, 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 potato all over town.
What was he talking about? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What is Governor Walker talking about in this clip?
There's nothing like hearing that potato, 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 potato all over town.
So if you think you know, give us a call. We will take your calls for 5 minutes, 5 minutes only, and then we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers. The winner will be announced along with the answer at the end of the Week in Review. The winner is entitled to one of the books that we featured on the program recently. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Dan Kopanky. There were more arrests at the state capitol rotunda this week, including the Wisconsin State Employees Union Executive Director Marty Beal. There have been 300 protesters arrested so far, mainly for not having the required permit. Governor Walker had a message to the demonstrators this week. Here's what he told Wisconsin Public Radio's Chuck Quirnbach this week.
There's this great myth amongst people who oppose my political beliefs here and across the country that somehow we don't want people to protest. It's very simple. They can protest every day for as long as they want through the remainder of this term and through any of my future terms. They can protest every day I'm in office. I have no problem with that. That's what's great about America. But we just ask them to simply follow the rules that are not inconsistent with many other capitals all across this great country.
Well, let's start with Dan Kopanky first on this one. Is it just that simple? Get a permit?
Well, I think so. These people have to remember that there are other groups that would like to visit the Capitol and have group outings at the Capitol as well. And so just getting a permit, if they don't charge anything for these permits, just get a permit and follow the rules that have been set down by not only the Department of Administration and the governor and also the courts in Madison. So it's pretty reasonable. I don't think Marty Beal getting arrested, carried away or taken away. I just don't think that I don't know what that gets him, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, Christine, your thoughts? The governor says protest away, just get a permit.
I guess it gets Marty Beal zip-tied on his wrist. What we wind up with is this young man, who's just a young guy, Damon Terrell, getting attacked. I don't know if you've seen the video. It's kind of amazing. Being tackled by six officers who pin him on a marble floor, twist his wrists, put him in zip-tie, and carry him out in a prone position. And if you watch the video, you can see him stepping back from the officer saying, walking away from them, saying, I'm not doing anything illegal, and he gets thrown to the ground. I mean, this is not the Wisconsin that any of us really can be proud of. These people are opposed to the permit process themselves. You know, I agree that, and Judge Conley has been very clear, and the law is very clear, that the government can restrict assembly as long as they do nothing to restrict the content of the message of the assembly. But in these cases, the groups are really working against the permitting process itself. So, Wisconsin's Constitution is even stronger than the United States Constitution with regard to our freedom of assembly. And Judge Conley was very clear when he said our Capitol building, in his 47-page decision on this issue, he said our Capitol building is a building that is meant for demonstrations. It's built so that people can gather and join together. And many of us, I've been there so many times and seen wonderful demonstrations. My kids sang there when they were little kids. These singers now who are being, really harassed, in my opinion, are doing nothing more than expressing what, we all believe is so important, and that is, their right to protest what happened under Governor Walker's regime. So I think that when we look at this whole issue, we have to say, what are the arrests really about? Why was it that under Chief Tubbs there were no arrests? And it wasn't until Chief Irwin came in, and after 18 months of these singers being there, suddenly we've got these arrests. I mean, these protests, these singing protests were dwindling down to about five or six people, and there wasn't much going on, and suddenly the police show up and they start arresting people, and it blows up into this huge, huge controversy. So I think this was really poorly handled. And, and now it's grown into this huge constitutional battle. And I think that it's when we've got tactics of the police, which are arguably, illegal in terms of what they're doing to protesters without Irwin doesn't even talk to people. If you talk to police chiefs across the country who have been involved in big protests, even the guys that handled the 1967 Democratic Convention, they said you have to talk to the leaders. There's been no conversation. The police prowl through the singers. If you watch the tape, and I invite everyone to do it, they will prowl through the singers and pick one person out. As long as there's more than 20, they pick one and arrest them. It's just ridiculous what's going on. And there should be more talk. And this is not right. And this is not the Wisconsin we all are proud of and know.
All right, let me, because we are so short on time, try to get through a couple more state issues before we end here. Republican State Representative Andre Jacques has introduced a bill that would make English the official language of Wisconsin. It would force state and local governments to put their documents in English, among other things. Dan Kopanky, do you support making English the official state language?
I think that would depend on the details of that bill. The devil would be in those details, if you will. And certainly English as Wisconsin's official language is one thing, but how does it restrict other languages and other people is quite another. So I would have to see the contents of that. I think these people that come in, people should make an attempt certainly to learn English. I talked to a school teacher from the Twin Cities recently. There was a classroom up there, I think 30 students, not one of them could teach or could understand English, and that makes it very, very difficult to learn in the United States. So, again, depends on what the details of that bill is. I think the concept is fine, but are there restrictions in that bill that or would not be wise going forward?
Christine.
Yeah, I think that the devil is in the details, and I would agree with one of my heroes, Jocasta Zamparipa from Milwaukee, who is a representative from there, who said, you know, she couldn't, under the terms of his bill, she could not communicate with her constituency, the largest Hispanic constituency in the state. So, you know, I live in Wausau, where we had a huge influx of Hmong population who did not speak English. And because our community was willing to, you know, to go bilingual with so many of our documents in our school district and in our city government and our county government, we now have a group of Southeast Asians who are really fully assimilated into our community with good English-speaking skills. And although we still support the elders who need assistance with the Hmong, with the English language, we recognize that assimilation takes place when we work together. And I think this bill is just, it's almost hateful. And I think that it's something that, you know, the GOP has to think hard about when they start alienating the Latino constituency once again, and I think this is wrong.
Well, we'll talk more about this bill on our state capitol report on Monday. We're also going to talk about a request for a new tribal casino in our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. Well, it's time now to congratulate Don in Deerfield. He is the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz. We asked, what was the governor talking about when he said this week?
There's nothing like hearing that potato, 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 potato all over town.
He was talking about, of course, Harley-Davidson motorcycles. Governor Walker says he's a big Harley fan. He owns his own hog, a 100th anniversary Harley Road King. He says that he's going to be taking part in this weekend's 110th anniversary celebration of Harley-Davidson in Milwaukee. Well, we're almost out of time, but Dan, Christine, are you Harley fans?
Oh, I love Harley. I don't own one, but I can't afford one, but I love Harleys. In fact, when I go to a gas station, there's somebody filling one up, I wait around until they start it because I love hearing that potato, potato, potato.
Christine, did I hear you that you're a Harley fan?
Well, I'm not really a Harley fan, but my legal assistant Heather is down there enjoying herself on her Harley with her good friend Bill, and I'm
yep.
waiting to get the pictures.
Thank
Are you going
you.
Joy?
I don't think so. Thanks to both of you for being with us, though. I hope everybody has a great weekend. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.